I think I've always been an advocate, right? It's like, that's, I've had a chance to immerse myself in this industry.
Yeah.
In the last, you know, 13, 14, 15 years. And to be able to see this up close is, it completely changes your perspective on just sit with it for hours on end and just watch it all roll by. Because it, you know, you kind of, you know, you get to visit a cockpit at the end of a flight, or you just, you know, something's on the ramp, you go take a look, and to really, you know, do that, it's, it, like, immerse yourself in it, it's just amazing. So thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it, and it's a totally different perspective.
So is it like a cockpit casual video? Like, do I do a good job of capturing the essence?
Absolutely.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Oh, well, you know, I feel like we need to, like, pipe in some jazz.
Yes.
We do get quite a bit of variety in our lives ferrying empty airliners around the world, but we also see the same trip over and over again sometimes. Picking up newly converted 767 BCFs from Singapore is one of the repeats, but having John Ostrower along from the Air Current really added an element of freshness to the round-the-world adventure. Starting the trip as passengers in Philly and airlining to Singapore eastbound via Doha, then flying the trip by continuing east to Miami via Honolulu made for a four-day circumnavigation with limited downtime. Not too many people have had the opportunity to experience it.
You, like, you travel, you go somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, you go to a destination, you stop there for an amount of time. Yeah, layover, fair enough. But we're like, we entered Qatar.
Yeah.
We technically entered Singapore.
Yeah.
And then we left.
Yeah.
Like, very, like, we did not spend a full day in any of these places. So it's this weird sort of, like, blurring of the idea of place,
right?
You know, you're sort of...
It's, yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah. And that's, you know, it's why I say I've been everywhere, but I haven't really been anywhere.
You know, then, like, where you have been is, like, inside of, like, a tin can.
Right.
Like, the size of, you know, like a minivan and a half.
Yeah.
For, what, beyond, what, total 20 hours?
Bob and I have been flying together so long, we've already discussed everything there is to talk about. Having John along was nice because we actually had things to say. I've followed John for a long time on social media, and we've spoken quite a bit offline. But after nearly 3 days in a minivan and a half together, we're now basically family. By nature of the job, the majority of our time is spent sitting in close quarters for hours on end. International long hauls inherently boring, and crossing the Pacific in a modern aircraft with controller pilot data link communications, or CPDLC, there's really nothing to do but monitor the aircraft, eat, talk, read books, and stare out the window. The sun set as we neared the Philippines, and we encountered a line of thunderstorms there which required some minor deviations. The line of storms made for a nice light show as we passed through the gaps to begin the very long stretch across the open water. The only two bits of land we'd see between here and Honolulu would be Guam and Wake Island. Lying opposite the Earth's rotation at nearly 600 miles per hour, the sun sets and rises pretty quickly. We only had about 6 hours of darkness on this leg before the sun rose again. An interesting fact, over almost all of the North Pacific Ocean, from the coast of California all the way to the Philippines, and as far north as the Aleutian Islands all the way down south of Majuro, the airspace is controlled in Oakland, California by the Oakland ARTCC Oceanic Operations Center, or KAZAC. This means that we make our position reports over HF to Air Inc., who relays our position to Oakland and forwards clearances back to us on the aircraft. Air Inc. is a private company different from the federal ATC employees working in Oakland, and the Air Inc. facility is nearby in San Francisco. This is why you hear us calling San Francisco over HF when summoning them. When we're CPDLC equipped, such as on this flight, we text message KZAC directly through Datalink and skip the middleman entirely. In an ever-increasing trend, the Oakland controller on CPDLC recognized our call sign and we had a short text conversation about cockpit casual. How cool is that?
You know, you always reach a point in the trip where you're like, okay,
yeah.
All right.
Well, coming in like over the Pacific where it's just water.
Yeah, and you're not talking.
Like, you know, pretty cloud. And then it's like just like Hawaii. It's like the islands kind of come out. It's like, that's...
It was a routine visual approach into 8 left at Honolulu, completely typical. But even after hundreds of times, it's mesmerizing, especially after such a long, mundane journey over the ocean. I'm glad John got to experience such a good iteration of it.
Boeing 205, descend and maintain 3,000, reduce speed to 180.
3,000, 180, 205.
HCF American 31, 2.5, climbing to 4,000.
American 31, HCF approach, radar contact, maintain 4,000. Turn right heading 170.
Kill maintain 4,000.
Well, that's... Now we're set.
The contrast of the busy terminal area around Hawaii and the peace of overflying the Pacific is vivid.
Say 230 till when?
Pneumatic 123 heavy, maintain 180 knots to a 7-mile final. Numerous BFR targets in the pattern at Kalailoa. Conic Tower 118.1. Good day. Hawaiian 205, turn right,
heavy wind 13012, gust 190, runway 8 right, clear for takeoff.
8 right, clear for takeoff, United 2719 heavy.
Derek 06001, hold short of taxiway echo.
Hold short, taxiway echo 00001.
Cyrus Mongo 347 for 48 over flexible.
Mongo 347, Honolulu Town, runway 48, continue. 4 right, continue. Point 248, hold turn, cross the right, left at Juliet.
Cross the left at Juliet, point 248.
Cross at 248, turn right, Delta taxi, Charlie to parking, monitor ground.
Right at Delta taxi, Charlie to parking, monitor ground, monitor for it.
75-0, long landing is approved, runway 48, clear to land.
4 right, clear land, long landing, 35-0.
Good landing, home short.
25, left 20. Point 16, hold turn, cross the right, left at Juliet, traffic 5-mile final.
Cross the left at Juliet, line 16 heavy.
Delta, taxi via Zulu to Charlie 7.
All right, Delta, Zulu to Charlie 7, 143, good ahead.
30, escape right,
approaching Oahu west to east, we flew right over Koalina, a golf course Ava and I have played, and then across the inlet for Pearl Harbor on short final.
Marco 347, 11301, gust 190, runway 4R, clear to land.
All right, clear to land from Marco 347.
Medevac 60, hit your Papa, Holly Tower, cross runway 4 to Foxtrot, runway 4 left, line up and wait, traffic landing, crossing, runway crossing downfield.
Cross 4 right, line up and wait, 4 left, Medevac 60, hit your Papa.
Runway 50, turn left at the end, cross runway 4 left, traffic is holding in position, taxi Alpha Whiskey Zulu.
Up at the end, cross 4 left, Alpha Whiskey Zulu, running 6. Medevac 60 Victor Papa, looks like you got a cardboard FOD right between the runways.
Medevac 0 Victor Papa, I'm sorry, say again?
You got FOD, cardboard at Foxtrot right between the runways.
Medevac 0 Victor Papa, right. Alpha Tower, Southwest 3049 is on the visual, 4 right. Southwest 1957, Alpha Tower, cross runway left at Juliet, taxi runway right.
Okay, cross 8 left to Juliet, cleared to 8 right, Southwest 1957.
Southwest 3049, Alpha Tower, runway 48, continue. Continue, 4 right, Southwest 3049.
Tower, runway 11, I'm just with you, 5 mile final, 8 left, I have Yankee.
111, heavy hot tower, wind 140 at 11, gust 190, runway 8 left, clear to land, hold short, runway 4 left, arriving, Boeing 737.
Okay, 8 left, clear to land, hold short of 4 left, Hawaiian 11, heavy.
No matter, 123, heavy, turn left on Yankee, then contact ground.
Tower line 205, visual 8 left, 170 or slower.
Line 248, runway 8 right, line up and wait, traffic over, fly the runway.
8 right, line up and wait, Hawaiian 248.
Medevac 0, Victor Papa, wind 14011, runway 4 left, clear for takeoff.
Clear for takeoff, 4 left, Medevac 60, Victor Papa.
It really doesn't matter how exhausted you are after a long stretch in the cockpit. Toothpicks in your eye sockets to keep your eyelids open, whatever. But the moment you open that door and walk down the stairs in the fresh air, a second wind always hits, making rest a challenge. John was the first one out the door, and before we could even get the times in the logbook, Ostrower was on the ramp, DSLR camera in hand, snapping shots of the jet, the ramp, and the constant flow of F-22s doing high-performance takeoffs off of 8 right. We got into the van and made our way out to Waikiki. After checking into the hotel, we grabbed a quick bite at the Musubi Cafe and went over to the ABC store to supplement our catering order. We do always order legit catering in Honolulu, but the ABC store has fast become my go-to for self-catering. I can't get enough of the Korean fried rice breakfast tray, the Musubis, the Moco Locos. Of course, we also get our caffeinated beverages there, and Bob, as usual, needs his candy. We finished our shopping right as the exhaustion finally grabbed hold. We drew the blinds in our rooms and slept all day into the night. Our departure time was about 2 a.m., and we'd have nearly 12 hours to sleep and prepare for the final stretch.
UPS 2965 heavy, Roger. Proceed direct, valet.
Getting back into the saddle with fresh clothes, a shower, and deep sleep behind us, we were ready for the 9.5-hour leg nonstop to Miami. As is typical for this trip, LATAM sent an engineer, our friend Marco, to join us in Honolulu and accompany the aircraft into Miami. Marco showed up an hour before us and serviced the engine oil, supervised fueling, and cleared any issues we had on the way in, which were minimal. At 2 a.m., Honolulu Airport is pretty much a ghost town with mainly cargo flights coming in and out. They consolidate all ATC frequencies down to one, with one controller handling almost everything from clearance to ground to tower. The first hour or so was dark, and because we maximized our rest in Honolulu, none of the three of us really caught up on emails on the ground. So once we got up to cruise and the workload lightened, we opened up our devices and got caught up on what was happening and what we missed over the last 30 hours or so. Once the sun came out on the Hawaii tracks to the mainland, I decided it was finally time to get up and give you, the viewers, a proper tour of the 767 BCF. A cargo conversion is a really extensive modification. Of course, the bulk of the changes happen from the L1 boarding door back, but a lot of modifications happen in the cockpit too. For one, the cockpit rear bulkhead is pushed back considerably. With the extra space, a lavatory is installed in the cockpit itself. Along the back wall, three supernumerary seats are installed which fold flat against the bulkhead. These are for jump seaters, loadmasters, heavy crew, or engineers. Looking aft from the cockpit, you step down into a short space which accommodates the L1 door, the cargo compartment access door, and a small galley. The galley has storage cabinets, a waste bin, and an oven, and even a hot pot for coffee or hot water. With the galley mod, there's no chiller or refrigeration, but the catering is often delivered with dry ice, which does a fine job at keeping things fresh between meals.
Yeah, that was actually, honestly, that was one of the most surreal sort of parts of this. Like, going back in the cargo hold,
yeah,
knowing that there's, like, you know, 82% of the sound air just going, rushing past you on either side, and it's, like, aluminum and a little bit of sidewall.
Uh-huh.
And that's a
And a cavernous door that's being held closed by some metal latches.
Exactly. It's like you put your faith in engineering. And
every time.
And, you know, just being back there, it's incredibly loud. It's unbelievably loud.
Yeah, the insulation is less on a freighter, right? It's on a freighter, the name of the game is saving weight so that you can fill it with payload.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, obviously the cargo doesn't care how loud it is back there. So although there is still insulation back there, that's mainly for climate control. It's thin, and then you don't have those heavy plastic sidewalls and sound insulation that passenger jets have. That all goes, and then they just put a liner around the side, and it's a metal floor, and it's hard everywhere, and it's loud, and it's echoey.
Beside cutting and fitting a cargo door to the side of the main deck, a big part of the mod involves the installation of a cargo loading system, or CLS. The CLS enables the pallets or containers to lock into place and prevent load shifting. It also features a ball roller deck so that ground crews can rotate and position the cargo prior to sending it to the back. There's also an option to install a removable crew berth in the front part of the main deck, where you see our bags. This aircraft didn't have one at the time, but it's likely that a crew rest compartment will eventually be fitted into the aircraft once it's in service. Other items of interest, a variety of little bins and cubbies. This one holds the crew life raft, Nomex gloves, and some survival equipment. Above the supernumeraries, three tray tables can be removed and fitted to the armrest, making it convenient for ACMs to eat their meal. And above those, of course, pressure demand oxygen masks stowed for quick access in the event of a depressurization. The lav is also equipped with its own portable O2 bottle and a little red light that lets you know if the cabin altitude is too high and oxygen is required. You know, in case you find yourself in doubt whether the lightheadedness is on account of the stink or an actual pressurization issue. Once we coast in over the U.S. mainland, suddenly the peace and quiet of oceanic operations gives way to the bustle of the U.S. airspace system. Constant VHF radio chatter, numerous handoffs, route changes, and weather deviations replace the serenity of being the only airplane for hundreds, if not thousands, of miles. The scenery also improves, and John got to shooting.
Down 36.6,
I guess we as pilots take for granted the many air-to-air plane spotting opportunities that the busy U.S. airspace affords, because every 2 minutes, John was showing me awesome pics he was taking with his good camera of other planes passing above, below, and side to side. At one point, Bob put on the headset and took full control of the aircraft and radios. John and I did a little interview and joked that it was probably the first time in history that a journalist was interviewed by a pilot at altitude on a flight in the cockpit. Ha! Maybe so.
This airplane served as a passenger airliner for so many years, yeah, and moved millions of passengers, yeah, you know, between South America and the United States and Europe and all over the place, and now it'll be around for another 20 to 25 years as a freighter, moving cargo. It's genius, really. It makes me question new build freighters, but I'm sure you could give a lot of reasons for those as well, especially long haul freighters.
You know, it's funny, this airplane was actually started in service like right as I was beginning my career covering aviation. It's a, I think, a 2008, 2009 delivery. It was at a time when the 87 hadn't yet entered service, and still in development, and the time it was actually on Chile, where the aircraft started at the time. And it spent the last 13 years flying passengers, and the pandemic was sort of the opportunity for them to take this fleet of 767s and turn them into cargo aircraft. And that's the one of the big reasons that I'm here covering this story, because it really, you know, look, we see the cargo boom coming out of the pandemic, but it keeps reinforcing itself with sort of the great acceleration that COVID brought. You know, it's like e-commerce is just absolutely exploding.
Yeah.
People want stuff, they want it for two-day delivery.
Right.
And so whether it's horses or, you know, your coffee,
right?
I mean, it's like, it's all being delivered, you know, if you're ordering from Amazon or wherever.
These days you expect to be able to go online and click a few mouse clicks, and all of a sudden whatever you want is on your doorstep. Well, airplanes are behind that.
Yeah.
I mean, they truly are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every level.
I'm not going to express any of my opinions on politics here, just here to point out the interesting things we see and do on ferry flights. With that in mind, when we passed over El Paso at 39,000 feet, I used the 10x zoom function on my phone to try to locate the infamous border wall between El Paso and Juarez. It was incredibly difficult to see with the naked eye, but I did manage to eventually locate the miles-long, multi-billion-dollar row of rusty steel slats separating huge expanses of uninhabitable desert, and thought, well, it was worth at least showing you, so here you go. We We finally started descending from Miami, and some very large storm cells in the area imparted chaos onto the terminal area. Just as we started down on arrival, we were given delay vectors and a few turns in holding while we waited for our turn to get into the mix with Miami approach. Of course, the three of us were trying to make tight flights home on the same day, so we were a bit concerned about missing them. In the end, it worked out, and we just barely made our flights, but leave it to fate to always keep us biting our nails until the final moments.
American 1481, reduce speed to 210.
Great to 10, American 1481.
American 1006, turn left heading to 030.
030, American 1006.
Number 7, Kilo Fox, right descend to maintain 4000.
Down to 4000, 7 Kilo Fox.
Director 702, Miami approach, your north side, correct?
That's permanent.
Director 702, vector's visual approach, runway 8 left. American 1006, heading 335, maintain 4000.
335, heading 4000 feet, American 1006.
Once we got south of the weather, we maneuvered across the Everglades south of the field to join a right downwind for the east runways. This is the normal configuration for the Miami airport, and the storms over the Gulf Coast prohibited the orderly flow of eastbound traffic from a more direct arrival path.
Uniform Victor, hold short, runway 12 is me. Uniform Victor, hold short, 12,
America 1481. Good afternoon, I think 030 ILS, runway
9. Happy Alpha 030, Miami Tower, wind 150 at 7, runway 9 air clear to land, cross main terminus and trail, heavy going at 767.
Okay, roger, accept land, runway 9, I think 030.
If you have 3509 heavy, it'll be about 5 minutes for you for arriving traffic.
Because the aircraft was about to enter service, LATAM asked us to complete an APU in-flight start for ETOPS purposes, which we did early in the trip. They also asked us to do an auto land. The landing in Miami was flown all the way to rollout by the autopilot, and quite frankly, it did a stellar job.
American 1481, cross runway 12 of Victor, contact ground point 8 on the other side.
Cross 12 of Victor, American 1481.
For 1481, traffic off the right waits for you.
1481, thank you.
Omni 123 heavy, roger, left turn, Tango 7, join Sierra to the, let's go Tango to the right, there's one pushing on Sierra.
While we were taxiing into Miami, we caught a glimpse of CXD, also known as CXE's uglier sister. It was still unpainted, but actively hauling cargo between North and South America regularly. CXD had just pushed out of the cargo gates and was heading down to Bogota with a full load. Our jet, CXE, would be loaded up the next day to fly the same route. This trip ended anticlimactically when we pulled into the gate. The LATAM ground team was there to accept the aircraft and shuttle us around to the terminals to catch our flights, which we all made within 30 minutes of departure.
Yes! Very little time. We're done, though. Epic trip. Beautiful.
Beautiful place.
Yeah, man.
Where'd John go?
Oh, there he is.
Aside from having John along, it was completely uneventful, but will definitely go down as a trip I'll always remember. Getting to share these adventures with someone who would otherwise never get a glimpse into our world is a great feeling, and the same reason I make these videos. I know John had a blast and definitely got a lot of footage and information over the course of just 4 days. I can't wait to see what he has to say about the experience in the air current. I guess we'll see soon.